This is Future Water, where we talk about all the ways which companies, utilities, and people are addressing the challenges and opportunities in water. So let Bluefield Research be your guide to making better business decisions or just be better informed. Today, it's all about cybersecurity, water infrastructure, and industry concerns. I am Reese Tisdale, and today I'm lucky to be joined by Eric Bendler, Research Director of Bluefield Research. Eric, how's it going?
Going pretty well, Reese. How about you?
Pretty good. I mean, it's the same old story, right? We're all living day to day, it seems, in more ways than one, but it's running together. Things are good. I mean, I would say from a Bluefield perspective, it's been busy. If you had asked me 3 months ago or told me that we're going to go into a global pandemic and there was going to be economic collapse, and I would say, oh my God, but things are actually pretty good. And I know clients are pretty engaged.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So there's a lot going on, but one topic that has come up, I know a couple weeks ago, if not a month ago, I don't know, time's getting away from us. We talked a little bit about, or a lot about COVID-19 and its impact, but also really the acceleration of the digital water landscape or sector, meaning greater adoption in a number of different ways. So for those who are interested in that, I think we've already recorded a podcast on that. We've also done some webinars and provided some content to clients on our site. So, but more recently, sort of on the back end of this, there's the elephant in the room when it comes to digital technologies is cybersecurity. And I think last week, week and a half ago, Iran had been linked to an attempted cyber attack that authorities believe was aimed at disrupting water supplies in two locations in Israel. So what's the background on that, Eric?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I think it's an important incident. It definitely made the rounds in the water industry news that we follow. But so it sounds like, you know, I think some of the details maybe are still kind of murky, maybe still under wraps to an extent. But it sounds like, as you said, you know, some hackers tried to essentially infiltrate the control systems for a pair of rural water and wastewater providers in Israel. One thing that has come out is that they were trying to manipulate a few different elements of the water distribution and wastewater treatment process. But it sounds like they were, at least one of the attack strategies that they were using was trying to manipulate chlorine levels. So to actually cause the system to put more chlorine in than is maybe necessarily safe. So not only to increase the dosing of chlorine, but also to spoof the online chlorine monitors and sensors to continue to generate like normal readings to make the operators that are monitoring the system actually think that chlorine levels were fine when in fact they were spiking. Fortunately, it sounds like they were able to catch the attack before any real damage was done. It's certainly a good thing, but you know, word on the street is that it was linked to Iran-sponsored actors. So that's, you know, certainly kind of a concerning trend to keep an eye on.
I guess when in doubt, blame it on Iran. I mean, I think in Israel, as we all know, one, it's small, but also water is of critical importance. So to see that happening is, I don't want to say not surprising. We talk about water independence and using different solutions, whether it be desal and reuse as well, increasingly. But on the digital side, But this isn't new. I mean, I think this is a common argument that people who are opposed to smart meters, let's say, or other technologies that they use in those arguments to fight, whether it be the cost or the invasion of privacy. So where else have we seen this in water and wastewater?
Yeah, absolutely. Looking back at a history of some of these types of events, I mean, certainly there are plenty of potentially high profile attacks that we could point to. One interesting one that goes back as far actually as the year 2000 was in Queensland, Australia. A small local government council was subject to kind of a similar type of attack. So it sounds like what happened was a SCADA contractor went and applied for a job and he wasn't hired. And so kind of in retribution, he stole some radio equipment and actually used that equipment to start issuing some commands to the wastewater treatment plant. He kind of hacked the radio network, the telemetry network controlling the wastewater treatment plant, and caused a major sewer overflow. About 200,000 gallons of raw sewage spilled out into local parks and rivers and commercial property. So that's, you know, as far back as 2000, you know, there are incidents like this going on. I mean, I think much more recently, if we look even just to last year in the US, for example, we've seen reports that as many as 12 electric and water utilities in 18 different states were subject to cyber attacks. At least like 40 to 50 municipalities in total were attacked. And so there's some pretty high profile incidents in, you know, Albany, New York, as well as Rochester, a number of smaller rural cities in Texas. The most high profile one that we saw last year was actually in Baltimore. was kind of a ransomware attack that basically crippled city government, including the water and wastewater departments. They weren't able to issue water bills for about 3 months, from May until August. I've seen some estimates that hackers were demanding like about $76,000 in Bitcoin, which the city didn't pay, but it sounds like total cost of the damage was put at somewhere around $18 million in, you know, lost revenue due to not being able to issue those bills, in cost to try to recover all that data, recover control of the system. So, you know, pretty significant price to pay by the city of Baltimore. And then even more recently than that, just back in February, it sounds like at Southern Water, you know, a major UK utility, was subject to a phishing attack. And so it sounds like hackers kind of spoofed the email address of the utility CEO and sent out an email about coronavirus, right? You know, kind of topical, obviously, but an email with a subject line of coronavirus. And so an employee clicked on that and, you know, hackers were able to infiltrate the system. You know, again, fortunately, as in the case of Israel, it sounds like the utility was able to detect that and kind of shut it down, actually pulled a bunch of their systems offline before any damage was done. But even in, probably especially in the midst of a global pandemic, you know, these kind of bad actors are out there trying to perpetuate these types of attacks on water systems and just municipalities more broadly.
So you mentioned two things, if I'm deciphering it correctly, and that is their ransom attacks, you know, like you said, Baltimore, and then they're hacking assets, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So it's interesting. And I think everybody gets concerned about it. Like, hey, someone's gonna, like you mentioned, you know, in Israel, too much chlorine in the system is obviously not good for human consumption. So controlling that, is that an attack? I think we see dams getting attacked. Well, let me ask you, so what are they typically going for? Are they going for specific, like you mentioned SCADA systems? Is it things like that that they're going after, or certain control systems and such?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point. And, you know, as you mentioned, you can kind of classify these attacks in two different buckets. I mean, I think more generally, when we think about cybersecurity and the water and wastewater industry, there's the IT system or the business network, right? Which would be your billing system, your customer account system, your HR system, any type of like enterprise, you know, asset management, enterprise resource planning, all of those kind of those IT or business systems are, you know, there's one bucket there and there's one set of cybersecurity practices and priorities and one set of attacks that occur in that space, the kind of business network space. And then there's the control network, which would, you know, you could also consider like the operational technology or OT space. And that would be your SCADA, where the systems that are actually kind of controlling, you know, the key processes in water treatment, water distribution, wastewater collection and treatment, et cetera. I think this is one of the really key issues to think about in kind of thinking about cybersecurity in the industry. They're, again, very different sets of priorities. You know, for example, on the IT side, really the priority is trying to just protect data, whether that be customer data or user data, protecting access to that information, you know, access to the systems themselves. You know, again, I think Baltimore is a good example there, where utility staff were simply unable to access those systems and unable to do their jobs as a result. And then there's the OT side, where really the priority is keeping the system running, right? It's kind of keeping these critical infrastructure processes like treating and distributing water actually up and running and operational. You know, there's also differences in the timelines that these two different types of technology operate on. On the IT side or on the business side, you know, you may get a new laptop every couple of years. You know, you may get a security patch automatically every week, right? If you're using technology that's kind of supported by major tech vendors that are monitoring these cybersecurity threats on a regular basis and updating their software accordingly. On the OT side, you know, your SCADA systems, for example, a utility may not actually, they typically keep those systems in place for, you know, 20, 30 years, right? And so it's a very different time scale in terms of staying current with the latest software, with the latest security practices. And I think that's one of the big challenges, especially as we really think about what's happening in kind of the digital water space more broadly. There is this increasing convergence between the IT space and the OT space, right? There's all of these, you know, really great benefits to being able to take data out of the operational technology side, out of the SCADA system, for example, and bring that over into the IT side, where you can, you know, use that data for compliance reporting, or you can use that data for visualization, for analytics, for better understanding your processes and kind of driving efficiencies that way. And so, you know, as these two worlds kind of increasingly collide, utilities have greater challenges in terms of making sure that threat vectors can't kind of infiltrate one and take control of the other, right? Like enabling that data to transfer between those two environments, but keeping them relatively separate and ensuring that they're both adequately secure.
That raises a good question. Then how prepared is the utility sector, broadly speaking, for facing threats like these?
it is really kind of the question of the hour. I mean, I've seen some recent reporting from Siemens and the Poneman Institute back in October of last year. There's kind of a report that they put out looking at just cybersecurity threats and cybersecurity preparedness kind of in the utility sector more broadly, right? So water, but also electric and gas utilities. And so in this survey of about 1,700 utilities around the world, they found that about 25% of them had in the past been subject to some sort of a major attack in cybersecurity terms. So I think, you know, it's a pretty significant number, right? 25% of 1,700 utilities had experienced some sort of cyber attack in the past. And, you know, we've seen some reporting in the US, for example, that the water supply sector has, you know, accounts for about 15% of all industrial security vulnerabilities. So certainly an area where there are plenty of threats out there and, you know, plenty of attacks kind of happening on a regular basis. But on the flip side, if you look at where utilities actually are with this, it's something that I think just, you know, hasn't necessarily gotten the attention, the resources, the investment necessary to meet that level of threat. You know, in the US, looking at, for example, survey data from the AWWA, only about 31% of utilities surveyed had fully implemented cybersecurity technologies, with another 29% or so in progress. And that was in 2018, right? So pretty recent. So certainly, I think a pretty big gap still remains between, you know, the kind of scale of the threat versus what utilities are actually doing about this. And I think really, especially when you think about smaller utilities, rural utilities, that those differences are even more stark, because 50,000 water systems in the US, many of them, the majority of them serve only a few hundred, a few thousand people. These utilities may have a couple people on staff. They don't have a dedicated IT person. They don't have a dedicated cybersecurity person. They don't have the financial resources to really be making the investments in their systems that they need to kind of protect against these threats. And so we have seen kind of across the municipal space more broadly, hackers seeing that and realizing that and taking advantage of the vulnerabilities of smaller systems that just haven't been able to put those resources in place. It's also kind of a cultural question, right? I mean, it is a matter of just understanding, not just being able to make the financial investments and the kind of technology investments, but also just understanding kind of best practices, understanding the risks, knowing what types of emails you should and shouldn't click on, for example, as in the case of that Southern Water example that I mentioned a few minutes ago. But, you know, I've heard anecdotally, for example, stories of treatment plant operators, kind of rural treatment plant operators, deciding to install like a video game on the SCADA system computer just to kind of keep themselves awake at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, and ending up crashing the system just because the server can't really handle that access to the outside world, as it were.
That's crazy. I mean, that's a really good example. I don't know if everybody talks about Stuxnet, but there are other ways. You know, people go out into like a company parking lot and throw a bunch of USB drives out there. And then someone eventually picks it up and hooks it up to the computer, and then they have a backdoor into the company system.
Right, right. Absolutely.
It's interesting. I think there are a lot of different pathways, and I cut you off, I think. Hopefully I didn't.
No, not at all.
With that being said, what about the vendors? A lot of the equipment, particularly the new equipment being installed, is already at least enabled to be connected. So what about the vendor community? What are they doing, if anything?
I think it's a great question and another important angle of this. In some cases, I hate to say it, I've heard stories of vendors actually being part of the problem for just that reason that you mentioned. If you're a hardware provider, connected hardware provider, and you want to be able to maintain access to your data on your system performance, you know, again, if we're thinking about treatment plants, I just heard an anecdote just last week, actually, of a treatment plant operator who was working with, I think, a PLC vendor. And the PLC vendor really wanted to maintain a connection, maintain kind of access to that asset to be able to track data, to be able to track the performance of that asset over time, and create some very obvious security threats if it's not configured properly, you know, since that connection into the treatment plant could be used to kind of compromise the system more broadly. But I think more generally, as we look at kind of the digital water vendor landscape, we are seeing vendors really, really understanding this threat to a greater extent. I think maybe anticipating increased investment in this area by utilities, increased need in this area by utilities. And so a lot of the vendors that we track are finding ways to build up their own cybersecurity capabilities to make sure that their products are compliant, that they're able to help utilities deal with these challenges. So M&A, I'd say, would be maybe one of the most important areas to look at in terms of just the types of companies that digital water providers are buying, the capabilities, the teams, the services that they're adding to their portfolios. Just in, you know, the last like maybe two to three years, we've seen a pretty significant uptick in M&A related to cybersecurity in the digital water space. So, you know, if you look at, for example, technology providers like Cisco, Rockwell Automation, both have made some pretty significant acquisitions in this area in the past year or so. Especially on the EPC landscape, like Jacobs and Tetra Tech have both been really active here. Jacobs has bought, actually both of them have bought two companies in the past 2 to 3 years that are cybersecurity and broader data management service providers with capabilities that certainly extend into the water sector. And actually Accenture, you know, the big multinational Irish tech consultancy, they're super acquisitive just in general, but I've seen them, especially in even just like the past 12 months, they've made 4 cybersecurity related acquisitions that again have some sort of applicability to the water sector. I give that as a caveat because it's important to, I guess, keep in mind, you know, there aren't really that many pure play water cybersecurity companies that I've seen. It's much more cybersecurity players, either, you know, software providers, hardware providers, or services providers that, you know, kind of hit a range of industries that would be water, but also the utility space more broadly or the local government sector. There aren't too many vendors that just sell into water, but it's important to keep in mind what these vendors are doing specifically for the water industry.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've talked a bit about that. And even one, cybersecurity, also you just put out your digital water quarterly tracking M&A deal flow, but also just the platform players, you know, as we look at, you've got your water focused platform players who have been acquiring assets. And then you mentioned a couple of the names where they're buying companies where they can leverage the technology or solution across multiple industries. So, I mean, it's probably where it's going. One thing that's interesting is where the water industry is as a whole, put in context, where is it relative to the financial sector or to the oil and gas sector or healthcare or other infrastructure, maybe electric power or gas? The water sector, I think it's sort of quietly sitting there and hasn't been forced to be really proactive. Obviously, the financial community, they're way out there on the curve, if you will, because, you know, hey, if someone hacks in, they get money and they're done. But I think we're starting to learn that even now because of coronavirus is what happens when things shut down and then kind of redefines what is essential. Yeah, so while restaurants are shut down and it's a bad thing, we're surviving, right? When childcare disappears because it's not available, that becomes a problem, right? So is it essential? For many, it is essential. When your water shuts off because someone's hacked the utility system or flooded the streets with stormwater, as you mentioned in Queensland, that seems pretty essential to me, but yet it's not the most proactive segment when it comes to cybersecurity. I've been trying to think about a lot of what is essential and what is not and what's valuable. It kind of makes you think about infrastructure and what do we need just to basically survive. And I would say pretty easily water is one of those. And I don't want to be hyperbolic about the whole thing. I mean, I think it's a reality, but I think we also need to put value on it, particularly as we start thinking about, we're in disaster relief phase, at least in the US right now, but when it comes to COVID-19, but as we go to stimulus and where does the utility sector go, this is one area, particularly as things become more connected.
Definitely the COVID-19 connection is something I wanted to touch on. I mean, I think we talked about some of the survey data, for example, that I referenced a few minutes ago. I mean, that's all already ancient history at this point, considering just how the world has changed in the past year or 2 years since those numbers were released. I mean, I think just anecdotally, the kind of need for cybersecurity and the awareness of cybersecurity within the water industry, I think, has really increased as a result of the pandemic and kind of the new working relationships, working conditions, working environments that utilities are all of a sudden subject to, right? And so, you know, if you look at the AWWA has been releasing these really interesting surveys of the US and Canadian water industry just over the past 6 weeks, 8 weeks, looking at every 2 weeks, what are utilities doing? What are they seeing in terms of, you know, financial impacts and whether or not they're able to access, you know, personal protective equipment and treatment chemicals. But they've also put out some survey numbers on remote work. And so the most recent survey that was released, I think last week, maybe, or the week before, found that about almost 80%, right, 79% of the 600 or something utilities that they surveyed have put work from home policies in place for the non-field employees. And another, I think, like 9% were in the process of kind of putting these plans together. So that's, you know, that together is almost 90% of utilities surveyed were have people working from home, you know, where possible. And again, anecdotally, I've heard that as much as 2/3 to 4/5 of the utility staff in some cases are working from home. And so these are all people that need access to the systems that they use to do their jobs, whether they're customer service and they need access to the customer service system, you know, their financial staff, and they need access to the billing platform, or they're the GIS engineer, they need access to the GIS platform, they're system engineers, network engineers, they need access to the hydraulic model software that's used. There's one set of kind of security principles that are required if you're talking about locking down an office building, for example, and locking down the networks that are used by people in that office building. But if you've got 80% of your staff working all over the place, you know, accessing these systems remotely, you need a very, very new set of security practices and tools. And so you've seen utilities scrambling to get access to this stuff. For example, I talked to a SCADA vendor actually at the beginning of this crisis, like back in late March. I talked to a SCADA vendor who had seen, you know, even at that point, the number of software licenses that they were, you know, kind of pushing out the door double, just as mostly as existing customers are like, hey, we need more people to be able to access these systems remotely. You know, we need these software licenses. That scramble to get the tools in place to allow utilities to continue to do their jobs in the midst of this crisis, I think has really brought a new degree of attention to cybersecurity. Even cybersecurity vendors are seeing the same thing. I mean, again, anecdotally, one vendor that I talked to a couple of weeks ago had said that they're having just this rush of new orders, new inquiries coming from utilities, and 75% of those were new customers that they'd never have any engagement with before. So certainly this pretty significant uptick in interest in cybersecurity and kind of an awareness of it. That's one thing that I think is really important to keep in mind. And then I guess this more broadly to your point about where the utility industry sits in relation to other industries, as you mentioned, right? Part of the issue is it's kind of regulatory, it's policy driven. The water industry, you know, in the US specifically, hasn't really had any real regulatory driver that's forcing utilities to take this seriously or to make investments in cybersecurity. That is starting to change. New Jersey actually kind of led the way with the Water Quality Accountability Act back in 2017, which requires all utilities above, I think, like 500 connections to develop cybersecurity programs, you know, training, awareness programs, mitigation plans, risk assessments. And then at the federal level, the America's Water Infrastructure Act of 2018 put some risk assessment and emergency response planning requirements in place that are starting to come into effect. The largest utilities serving over 100,000 people and up are required to submit their emergency response plans by September of this year. And then, you know, as you get to smaller utilities, you know, the implementation timelines are a little bit more staggered. But by the end of next year, by the end of 2021, all utilities serving more than 3,300 people and up should have gone through this process of identifying key risks, including cybersecurity risks, and preparing emergency response plans. And so what I've heard from other cybersecurity vendors in the space is that that's kind of fairly similar to what happened in the power side, right? It was kind of the first step from a regulatory perspective was to put these self-assessment and self-verification processes in place. And then once that initial hurdle has been passed, there's potentially more room for more formal regulations with maybe more teeth to kind of require utilities to take action. So it does sound like we're getting there, you know, both from a regulatory perspective, but just the industry more broadly is becoming more aware of these threats. But, you know, I do still think we have a ways to go in the water utility sector kind of catching up with the cybersecurity awareness and preparedness of some of those other industries that you mentioned.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you talk about regulations, in particular at the federal level, what flashed before my eyes was Mark Zuckerberg sitting there in front of a Senate committee explaining the internet.
Right.
I mean, it's like the technology is going so much faster than the regulators or those that are supposed to be in charge. And then the water industry also, right? They have to maintain affordability on the water side. You know, customers can only pay so much. So how do you recover the cost for these investments? It's tough to do. And we know that for the non-regulated utilities, of which is the lion's share, large majority, rates and things like that can be very political. And also just, you know, it's conservative, right? The sector and should be for many reasons, but for other reasons, back to my earlier point about, you know, my philosophical thoughts about what's essential and what's not, what we're going through now, but also when water starts disappearing, you know, it starts challenging your your basic or foundational assumptions about, oh, you know, what we put value on and where we should be putting money. So without going on too long, are there any other trends that we should be keeping an eye on going forward?
I think the main ones in my mind, the kind of future trends would be that evolution of the policy trend and kind of what happens as we see those utilities go through that process of risk resilience assessments and then emergency response plans. And then, you know, again, kind of look at the COVID-19 question about how that's driving more awareness, more investment. I think, again, as we are really, I think, hypothesizing, but also increasingly seeing as we kind of continue to track what's happening in the industry, it does sound like all signs are kind of pointing towards just an increased level of digital transformation within the industry as a result of this experience, right? And that runs the gamut of, you know, increased investment in network monitoring, remote access, remote control, you know, mobile workforce management, mobile, you know, billing and payment processes, but also cybersecurity. And I think that is really one of the areas that we're going to see a greater degree of investment kind of long-term moving forward. You know, there's the initial process that utilities have had to go through of just getting set up to withstand this crisis and withstand this kind of unprecedented process of needing to work so remotely and in such a distributed way. But I still think that whenever it is, if it's 12 months or 18 months or 2 years or whenever down the line that we're getting back to normal to the extent that we will, and people are able to work in offices again, for example, you know, I do still think that this awareness of digital technology, the benefits of digital technology, but also the importance of cybersecurity, those are lessons that are going to stick with the industry, I think, moving forward.
I think you kind of nailed it. Utilities, system operators, they're being forced to do it because everybody's working remotely, like you talked about. Secondly, on the vendor side, equipment is enabled to be connected. Whether it's connected or not is a different story, or whether it's connected accidentally. That's always a risk. And then I think thirdly, customer expectations are higher, right? Their customers are more informed, hopefully correctly informed, but definitely more informed. And they have a bigger voice, whether it be through Twitter or Facebook or other social media platforms. So they're able to make more noise. So it will be interesting to see how that plays out in the regulations to wrap it up. So look, Eric, we could probably talk about this all day. And I know you talk to clients all day about this. So thanks a million for jumping on. And we are remote, in fact. So hopefully nobody's stealing our podcast audio file. So thanks again for stepping up. So be well, be safe, and always be kind. I think we need a little bit of that. So we'll talk again soon.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot, Reese.
All right, everybody. So this podcast and these water industry insights have been brought to you by the one and only Bluefield Research, which is advancing water strategies and decisions globally for companies across the value chain. You can always learn more at bluefieldresearch.com, or you can always follow us on Twitter at Bluefield Water, which is our handle. And don't forget to subscribe to the Future Water podcast, which you're listening to right now. You can find it on iTunes, and maybe showing my age here, you can find it on all the other podcast platforms that our podcast hosting provider puts it out to. So just give it a search. And if you have any questions or ideas or thoughts for other podcasts, definitely reach out to us at Twitter or just go to our website and fill out the contact form. Everybody, talk soon. Be safe.